As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to the 3-0 Show, part of the Athletic Baseball Show. It's Thursday, May 4th. Derek Manriper, Bridger Oli, Eno Saris here with you on this Thursday. We're going to dig into pitching injuries and the possible link to the pitch clock. Of course, a lot of pitchers going down with various ailments to this point in the season. Britt recently wrote about the trend of stolen bases coming back. We'll discuss whether that's here to stay and what types of players might emerge from various minor league systems as a result of that. It has come to my attention that the Yankees are in last place. People are excited about that outside of New York, so we may talk about that. But let's start with the pitching injuries. There was a great piece that both of you wrote, along with Will Salmon, that went up on The Athletic earlier this week. And up front, I think it's fair to say it's too early to say that the pitch clock is causing anything, but a concern with the pitch clock was that fatigue would increase and pitchers would break down. So, Britt, I'll throw it to you first. What are we seeing so far? Are the worst fears of the pitch clock being realized in a way where teams are starting to think there is actually a connection? Or is it more of a let's get more information even on the team side?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. And Eno is much better, as you guys know, at getting into the nitty-gritty when it comes to the data. But I think just going around this spring, everyone was so worried about the pitch clock. And I don't think that these fears are entirely unfounded. I just think it's maybe a little too early to say, hey, this is causing that, right? We've seen a lot of injuries, but in baseball in general, we've seen a lot of injuries. They just keep going up. And the biggest issue for guys, the biggest indicator of whether a guy's going to go on the IL is, has he been on the IL before? So that number, unfortunately, just keeps growing, right? You start with a group of 5 guys, then it turns into 10 guys that are hurt. Right, then those 10 guys are more likely to go on the IL again and then add on new injuries, right? You could see how it keeps kind of multiplying itself like a bad virus. But I think honestly, and Eno and Will and I talked about this, we probably need to check in sometime in August because we know velocity is up. We know pitches per inning are up. We know that there's some stuff that really isn't great for pitcher health long term. But is it going to say, are you going to be ever able to connect the dot between the pitch clock and injuries? I don't think so. I think there are too many different things going on. There's a confluence of events. Yesterday after the article came out earlier this week, I had a former player text me and say, don't forget about all the arm injuries from the sticky stuff enforcement now. Guys are gripping that ball so hard. And we've seen a lot of elbow injuries and forearm injuries, shoulder injuries. We've seen all of that stuff kind of tick up. So I don't know if we're ever going to be say this causes that, especially with something that's this complicated.
Yeah, the unfortunate part of it, though, is that there's a long-term trend towards more injuries. So even if you look at our chart in our story where you see, oh, wow, the most starting pitcher, most pitcher injuries in April, you can kind of see that the bar just keeps going up. So it's unfair to put it all on the pitch clock because there were other seasons near ours that were like, whoa, that was also a big injury season, right? And every year has an excuse or a reason for it, which is, oh, we had the lockout and nobody was prepared. Oh, we had COVID and everybody came back in the middle of the season and wasn't prepared. So that part is confounding it. And then you've got the confounding the fact that velo just keeps going up. And velo is stress on the arm, you know, like throwing harder is stressful on the arm. And so, you know, as velo goes up, you'd think injuries would go up. And then, yeah, you're right. Sticky stuff, hadn't even thought of that in this context, but we did write about that in the moment when Tyler Glasnow went down. And so, you know, and Tyler Glasnow was saying, like, you know, I have to grip the ball further. The thing is, though, even though you try to separate those things out, the theory behind it, why there would be more injuries because of the pitch clock, I think is pretty unassailable. I know there's been some pushback in some circles on that, even on our piece or just in general, because, hey, the minor leagues, they didn't have these injury rates. I don't think the minor leagues are actually a really good testing ground for this now that I think about it. In the minor leagues, they don't throw as hard. You know, most of them don't throw as hard because they're not major leaguers. We select the ones that throw hard and put them in the major leagues, right? They also have totally different schedules. These guys will throw six, like starters in A ball will throw like 60 pitches and take 6 days off. You know what I mean? Like they're piggybacking. There's bigger staffs. Like there's all sorts of ways that teams really sort of baby pitchers in the minors. So you put a pitch clock on them and it doesn't go up. Yeah, that doesn't mean the major leaguers who are throwing 94 plus now on average aren't going to get hurt if they do it. And if you go back to the theory is, it's fair. I think it's unassailable. The theory is this. Less time between pitches is more fatigue. That's been proven. Like they've done this in a lab. They've done a peer-reviewed study on this. More time, less time between pitches means more fatigue. And then fatigue means injury. Like fatigued people injure more. And that's been something that's sort of just true in a general basis. So that's the general theory behind this. And that's driving some part of the injury. I will stand behind that to no matter who questions our work or points to the minor league stuff.
Right. So we may be looking at an increase of 10% or 20% or 30% compared to a normal year when the season's over. We don't know where it's actually going to land. I do think looking at...
Yeah, fatigue is one of those things you don't know when it's going to lead to injury. It's just like you're more fatigued.
Yes.
You know, you're more tired.
And I think of all the people that were talked to for the story, there were some that said, we're going to hit a cliff midsummer. The cumulative wear and tear is going to catch up to people at that point. That's one other thing to keep an eye on, too. There's still no solution to this because even before the pitch clock, the collective we, the industry, the baseball industry had not found a way to keep pitchers healthy.
Right. Yeah. That's the long-term threat.
Elusive problem.
The other thing. Yes. Everyone keeps saying, well, the pitch clock is going to get guys hurt. Like teams have figured out how to not get guys hurt. They haven't.
Right, yeah.
They haven't. For all of the money poured into this and for all of the pitch counts and the babying of the big league guys at the big league level, no one has figured it out yet. And I think, you know, had to hit the nail on that. It's velocity. The problem is these guys are throwing so hard that they're going to break and break early. And there's a lot of research too, that the guys are having Tommy John earlier and earlier in their careers. The earlier you have Tommy John surgery, your career, and Eric Cressy actually pointed out, there's this great survey on his podcast. He had a bunch of physicians on, and what they found in researching this over like 20 years is your career is much shorter the earlier you have Tommy John surgery. So you look at Justin
Verlander. You're more likely to have a second.
You know? Exactly, who just had Tommy John surgery and is 40 years old, you know, in his 40s. It's a totally different thing, right? But now we're seeing guys come up who have already had it, who haven't thrown a big league pitch. Maybe they've had it twice. You know, maybe they had it in A ball. Maybe that in high school. So that's another factor. The velocity thing, though, isn't going, to me, that's the biggest thing. If guys throw less hard, we probably have less injuries across the board. It's the easiest way to get rid of it. But does that ever happen? Will that ever happen?
I'm a little bit hopeful. And I was more hopeful of this before the season started. I'm a little bit hopeful that this does lead to velocity stepping back a little bit. I mean, the marketplace needs to reward innings at some point. There's going to be a point at which the like a team... And you've seen a little bit of it, like Baltimore, right? They traded for Cole Irvin and they signed Kyle Gibson. Why do they do that? Those guys aren't throwing hard. They're not getting strikeouts. They're not big stuff guys, you know? You know what? They looked at their rotation and said, man, we got a lot of young pitchers here. I don't know if we can get more than 100 innings out of these guys. We need to have at least two guys or one guy that we think can get 180 innings. You know, like if Kyle Gibson wasn't on that team, would there be another guy on that team? You'd be like 180 innings right here, you know? So, you know, the more the marketplace says, I am going to reward innings, and I, as a general manager, am going to pay this guy. I'm going to pay Kyle Gibson $15 million or whatever it is. Then people are going to say, oh, wow, okay, there is another way to go forward. People are paying for innings, and I can be an innings guy. So there might be some guys who sort of step off the gas and try to keep themselves healthy and try to be out there for innings. We'll see. That would be, there's always like the first effect. And then the second and third effect, you know, like there's always 10 years after you've had the pitch clock when maybe things have changed in a way that you didn't expect. So, you know, that's part is interesting. I, this is kind of off topic, but it's on my head because I just talked to Trevor May last night and at the ballpark. And there's a whole mental aspect to the pitch clock that I hadn't really, I don't think, given much thought to, which is Trevor May was talking about. So he just took some time off for anxiety, right? He hit the IL for anxiety. And he said, yeah, well, 30 or 40% of that was on the field. And the rest is, you know, my own stuff. He also said, and some part of it is, you know, all this, Oakland. He just waved the rest of the clubhouse, just like, you know, Oakland. You know, we're like, oh man,
is this on the record? I can't wait to see this.
he was on the record. I don't know how I'm going to use it exactly, but it was pretty hilarious. But he said that, you know, you have an internal clock as a veteran pitcher. You have an internal sense of the gravitas of the situation, and as a plate appearance builds, you kind of have ways of maybe taking a deep breath or walking around the mound. And I even tell my little kid this. He's in Little League. I'm like, we're really practicing on throwing strikes because it's in Little League. They don't throw strikes. The manager said, if he can throw 50% strikes in the bullpen, he can go in the game. So we're like, let's throw strikes. And so I have fake counts. And then when he's like, when it's 3-2 count, I'm like, 3-2 count, come on. Get off the mound, take a deep breath, walk around, and then focus and get back in there, right? Well, Trevor May was talking like, I do that. If it's 2-0, I feel like, okay, this is a big pitch, and I'll walk around and I'll think about that pitch. And he says, I can't think anymore. Like, I'm on the mound, I can't think. I can't think. It's like, I keep looking at the clock and I keep thinking about the clock and I can't think. And even him talking about it made me anxious, you know? And so, you know, then I went on a local show here with Chris Townsend, and he was a former pitcher, and he said, yeah, it's going to suck for the veterans who are here right now, but all the kids who are coming up don't care. All of them have been trained in this. And that part's true too. Like, of all the kids that are coming up, they don't care. All the guys who are debuting now, I don't even ask them about the pitch clock, because I have, and they're like, what? You know, like, they're like, yeah, I don't care.
You mean just the way it's been for the last few years for me? Sure.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I don't care. Like, I don't barely know any different. You mean in college? I don't know.
I mean, isn't there an advantage to guys not thinking too and just throwing? Like, certain guys, I think, like, is it a coincidence that Gerrit Cole is pitching so well this year? Or yeah. I think he's one of the guys who's benefited from the pitch clock. I was talking to someone about this the other day.
Maybe the high stuff guys, you know, just grip it and rip it, you know, just.
I don't know. Some of that's going to come back to game planning. Some of it's going to come back to how quickly pitchers and catchers process. I mean, like, there's a lot to that. I didn't think about the mental aspect of that either. I think that's a really interesting thing that Trevor May said to you. You know, yeah. I think the gesturing to an empty stadium also.
It's hilarious.
Not the first. Classic. Not the first time I've been talking to an A's player and they've just inserted that in there. Yeah. It's like, it's in their heads like Coors Field used to be. I used to talk to people and they would just bring up Coors Field. Like, I hate pitching there. I'd be like, I didn't ask about Coors Field, you know. But now it's like you're talking to an A's player and you're talking about something, and all of a sudden they're telling you they're drinking espressos, 5 espressos a day, because there's nobody in the stadium. They were literally like, you know, they announce they announce a number. So they announced the number of 2800 last night, and we did some counting because the 2800 is like the subscriber base, you know, like the it's like the
season tickets,
the season ticket base. Yeah, it's not who's there. And our estimate was about 1,000 because it had been a rain delay. I mean, it's a Wednesday night. It's the second game of the series. Like, you know, there's a lot of reasons it would be down. But
and how many of those are related to the players, like families and stuff?
Oh, my God. There was just as many Mariners fans as A's fans. And it was so quiet that you could hear. And the hecklers, I guess they had spent the rain delay drinking because a lot of it was just nonsensical. One guy, it was hilarious. One guy, we could hear him very clearly everywhere, was just going, baseball.
Yeah.
Baseball. It's like, is he just heckling the sport?
It's performance art right there.
I mean, yeah. I covered the no fan game, like the game in Baltimore, when they had the riots and they couldn't let fans in. And it was eerie how quiet it was. And I thought about that yesterday when I saw the attendance in Oakland, which, by the way, I guess is lower than all the average of all their affiliates, which is crazy.
Oh,
makes sense.
They're A-ball.
Beaten by the affiliates.
I know, they're double A. It's just insane to think about. But I wonder if it's the same kind of atmosphere. You know, like, honestly, I remember one of the players, I remember Adam Jones kind of looking at the up at the press box because they could hear us. You know how you talk about the players and stuff right, during the game? And we're like, oh, shit, we can't talk about these guys.
He's not, I think he's just not very good. Oh, not you, other guy.
It's just like a fall league game, but in a huge stadium. Yeah. That's the really strange part of it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
By the way, the A's, I looked this up after the Mason Miller 7 innings of no-hit ball earlier this week. The A's bullpen right now has a 7.07 ERA, which is incredibly bad. Of course, I was annoyed because Richard Lovelady gave a home run to A.J. Pollock. And I thought, you don't have two relievers that can get six outs on the back of a rookie giving you 7 no-hit innings. Why is that? Well, it's the worst bullpen ever at this point. Yeah. And I mean, ever. We're cutting the expansion era. We'll cut it off there because there are a lot of teams that didn't play full seasons going back like 100 years. So we're just going to focus on 1968.
Yeah, I saw there's a lot of like 1898s in there. I'm like, I don't think they played the same kind of baseball
different game.
In 1898.
But we have not seen this. The people listening to this podcast have never seen a bullpen this bad. The closest things we've seen to it actually came in the COVID-shortened 2020 season. The Phillies bullpen in that year had a 7.06 ERA. And that was almost, we're closing in on a similar number of innings. We're close. The A's have thrown 124 and two-thirds innings with their relievers so far. The Phillies threw 186 innings with their relievers that year. So, if the A's can at least get to 186 innings with a worse ERA than that 2020 Phillies squad, they go down in history for just being awful. Just completely awful.
I feel bad for Marcotte. Like, I know people say, well, he knew he was getting into, he took the job. But did anyone know they were going to be this bad? I don't think you could have predicted this level of awfulness, right? Yeah, it's one thing to be bad. You're going to lose 100 games. We've seen that before. The Pirates have done it. The Orioles have done it. Tigers have done it, right? There's a difference between that and this Oakland team. Like, those teams would eventually stumble into a good week or two. Do you guys see this Oakland team stumbling into a good week or two? It's amazing when they win a game. I watch the MLB recap rundown every morning. It's incredible when some team manages to lose to them.
They won last night, though, right? I think.
So many things have to go wrong for the other team.
I left that game early. Once there was a hit, yeah. I left.
I don't blame you.
But I will say that there's something they're starting to do the thing that they do in the lineup where they find guys. So like Brent Rooker hits the ball hard and looks like a legitimate player, and You know, you can, JJ Bleday has really cut his strikeout rate and he's up. And so you can kind of like see like, oh, they're doing the thing where they just find a couple hitters and they start to build a lineup. And in the rotation, I think by the end of the year, they'll have maybe two legitimate starters, maybe three. But the bullpen, you know, maybe they just didn't care on purpose, but you know, I've got the stuff stat and there's not a single player in the bullpen right now that has a stuff that's above average, except for Shintaro Fujinami, who has maybe the worst command in the big leagues. It's a tough road to hoe here. They actually need May to come back to just give him a credible veteran back there, I think.
So I'm going to take this opportunity to make a bold claim that I think the A's bullpen will get its ERA under 6 for the season over the course of the year. They're not going to go down as the worst bullpen ever over a full season, but they will look very bad in their first 200 innings compared to the 2020 bullpens we've seen. They're going to be one of the worst we've ever seen. What's surprising to me is that they are actually a better offense. The A's at a 93 WRC plus have a better offense today than the Brewers, the Astros, the Yankees, the White Sox. What is going on?
The White Sox are bad. That's a bad team.
Sure. How are they worse than Oakland, though? That's mind-blowing to me. How are any of those teams actually worse? To me, it's just the small samples, right? It's 30 games. Anything can happen over 30 games. But I actually think the A's, they are okay at finding some position players. I think that is a skill they've had for a long time. I think that's something we are seeing play out. Will they trade a couple of the veterans away? Probably. Ramon Laureano is not going to finish the year as an A, right? If he's healthy, he gets traded between now and the trade deadline. So they're going to take a few small hits like that. But the Brent Rooker type players, like that's their sweet spot. They find guys like that.
Ruiz is fun to watch.
Yeah, Ruiz is good. And then otherwise, they find guys like Rooker a lot where they take a guy who strikes out too much and give him more burn, and he improves his strikeout rate and becomes like a passable major leaguer. You know, that's what they did with Seth Brown, and like they have types like that. But I would say that some of the teams behind them have fundamental flaws in how they coach baseball, how they acquire players, and what they value in players. I mean, the White Sox chase more pitches outside the zone than any other team in baseball over like the last 5 years. So that's with different personnel. That's acquiring. They don't care about chasing. And the slugging percentage outside the zone is like 200. And inside the zone, it's like 450. So like, you know, that's a pretty easy math to figure out. If you look at Kansas City, they don't seem to care about hitting the ball hard. They keep bringing up these guys who make good contact, but don't hit the ball hard. I'm sorry, at some point, you have to hit the ball hard even to get a double. I mean, it doesn't always have to be at a homers. Sometimes you just need doubles. And so there's some philosophical things here going on that I think are flawed. And then just some rebuilding teams, Detroit being down there.
Yeah, Kansas City's a rebuilding team, though, for sure. The White Sox, should've totally different better. Scenario.
The Yankees are below the A's.
I mean, even the Astros without Jose Altuve, I get it. Altuve's not there. That alone shouldn't drag you from a top five offense to one that's like not in the top 20, even for a 30-game stretch.
You need to tweet that, just so people get upset. The Yankees are below the A's. That is something you should just tweet to like poke.
So are we going to throw gas on a dumpster fire with the Yankees? Yeah. People are irate with the Yankees right now.
They should be, though. Like, I don't know. I go on SNY. I think I've talked about this before. And the topic the other night was, what if they're just not a good team? Because they consistently get these older guys that are hurt all the time.
I think my question, though, for this team has been, other than adding Carlos Rodon, who has not been healthy enough to pitch yet in a game, what exactly did they do to change the roster from last year? The promotion of Anthony Volpe. I guess Harrison Bader wasn't there all of last year, so you got Bader in that late season trade. That's a difference.
But you acquired an always hurt guy, and he's hurt again.
You mostly, like with your group of position players, you just kind of ran it back, right? And you had the one big internal promotion of Volpe. I guess you could sort of count, you know, Cabrera and Peraza as guys that are
players. They were going to, the plan this year was depend on the young guys.
Does the fact that it's not working to this point mean that they were wrong by process, or is it just something that needs more time? Young players take time. Volpe, as we said a few weeks ago, is likely to get better. I like Volpe too. I think Volpe's going to be fine. I don't think Volpe's the reason why they're struggling. And
I never liked the Oswaldo Cabrera and Oswaldo Peraza. I never thought they were everyday major leaguers. So I think that part of that too is them thinking, well, maybe if they're not major leaguers, they're useful. You know, they're guys that can play in platoon situations and be backups. And that's part of what's going on now. The starters are hurt. And so those guys are playing more and they're not great everyday major leaguers. I mean, when this team is healthy, the heart of their lineup is Rizzo, Torres, Judge, and DJ LeMahieu with Volpe mixed in. That's a good fivesome. It's not very, and with Stanton is healthy too, that's six good hitters, I would say. And there's a lot of teams that have six good hitters and three good defenders. You know what I mean? Like there is more and more of that in baseball today, I think. It's just that I think the injuries have sort of all come together at the same time. And, you know, guys like Clark Schmidt, Anthony Volpe, and the Oswalds, haven't really come through. So I'm not as negative as people about it. I think it's a pretty good team, and I think when people get healthy, they'll go on a run. And as bad as people are saying they are, they're above 500. So, like, you know, there are teams that, you know, go 17 and 15 and then, you know, go on a run to get back in it. So
it's just perspective, though. I think it's always been this way with the Yankees. There are other teams in other sports that have this sort of ridiculously sky-high expectation, and when you look up and see four teams ahead of you in the division, that's going to light up WFAN. That's going to light up Twitter. That's going to get people really riled up. They're one game out of a wild card spot right now with a ton of things that has gone wrong.
Dude.
That's with zero Rodon, zero Severino, zero Frankie Montas. They've been throwing Clark Schmidt, Johnny Brito, a lot of Domingo Herman. I know his last start was a pretty good one. They have some wobbling in the bullpen right now, but Michael King maybe will take over as the closer. Clay Holmes might move more into that ground ball specialist sort of role, or the modern day equivalent of that, since you have to, you know, stay in the game longer than you used to. The bottom line is things could be so much worse for this team. The Yankees, with the injuries they have, could easily have a record more like the White Sox. They could be a 10-21 team today instead of a 17-15 team. So,
except they still have fundamentally, you know, good process on some levels. They care about strikeouts. Some teams don't care about strikeouts. Like the St. Louis Cardinals are bad right now because they don't care about strikeouts, or they didn't for a long time, and now they're reaping the rewards of that. But the Yankees strike a lot of people out, and they, you know, in terms of hitting the ball, they like hitting the ball hard, you know. So, you know, they've got athletes, they've got big guys. It's always a really big team. And it's always an injured team. So, you know, this is just one of their injury phases, how I see it.
Yeah, I think this would be give another month. Like, you want to complain about the Yankees, wait until June, because I don't think there's enough there to complain about just yet. I like that I mentioned the Cardinals last week as a team that I still liked. I think I even picked them to, I don't know what the toss-up was, but it was the Cardinals, like, whether or not you still believed. I think both of you were pretty much out, and I was like,
I'm out.
They're fine. And they have lost five in a row. They maybe have won one game since I defended them, which...
Are you going to come back to our side?
I don't know. I mean, I don't really know what to do, because I've tried to harness the Cardinals' devil magic, as people call it, for my own benefit on multiple occasions recently, and it hasn't worked. They have not come through for me in the instances in which I thought they would, beyond the call of them getting better. I'm with Eno, though. I think their problem is mostly on the pitching side. I think Ollie Marmol is probably going to get fired just because they have to do something. This is the overreaction theater of baseball, where...
I know. I like him.
He was a good manager last year, and after 31 games this year, suddenly he's not a good manager just because of that. The reaction is absurd, so I don't think he should get fired, but I feel like that's the button someone's going to press soon, because just like the Yankees, the Cardinals can't sit at the bottom of the division and look up at four other teams.
Well, there was the Tyler O'Neill thing too, which I think really kind of set up a bad taste in a lot of people's mouth. You know, when you're throwing players under the bus... It just didn't really sit well, I think, with a lot of people, and they weren't playing well. I think there's bad starts.
What did Tyler O'Neill say?
Don't you remember when Marmol said he didn't hustle, and then Tyler O'Neill was upset and called him out for calling him out? It was like a whole thing.
Oh, I just read something where he said, like, I've always busted my ass.
It ended up being a pretty minor thing, I think, in the long run, but it was when the depth chart was a little more crowded. It was before Jordan Walker got sent down.
It's the stuff that doesn't fly in there, and it's the stuff that doesn't do well in a clubhouse that's losing. There's like bad stuff, in my opinion. There's bad starts, and then there's starts you can't recover from. The Yankees are in a bad start. The Cardinals, I think, are in a start they can't recover from. I know we've seen teams do it.
Yeah, we've seen the Nationals, the Braves.
The Nationals, people love throwing in the Nationals had Trey Turner and Anthony Rendon on the IL that year. They had a ton of war just sitting there waiting to come back.
That's what the Yankees have right now.
Yeah, so it would be like the Cardinals waiting on Arenado and Goldschmidt.
They're only waiting on Adam Wainwright, and they've got a couple of relievers, Packy Naughton and Wilkin Rodriguez. They literally have three big league players on the IL right now.
And I don't think Liberatore is saving that rotation.
He could help, but...
This spring, the issue when I was there in camp was, do they have enough starting... the starting rotation was always a glaring issue. As soon as Wainwright went down, they had Mikolas as their opening day starter. And already it was like, oh, there goes the depth. You know, they just didn't have that heading into spring training.
And then they were projected to be bottom five in strikeout rate in the rotation, and they are bottom five in strikeout rate in the rotation.
The lineup,
and
guess what? People thought.
The ball is flying more again. The ball is flying more like 2021, so more homers. And there's no shift. You can't do the shift. So you really want to strike people out, and they're not striking people out. If you look under the hood, their offense is 10th in barrels. Their offense is 10th in WRC+. Like, they're a top 10 offense. And that's without Arenado. And no matter what the numbers say, Arenado is going to be better going forward, is my opinion. So I would give them a top 10 offense. Their fielding is right around 10th, you know, top 10-ish fielding. If you look at their bullpen, it's actually pretty good. You know, their bullpen's like 5th in stuff. Like, they've got a lot of stuff guys. It's like top 7 or something in strikeout rate. So, like, the bullpen's pretty good. So if they're top 10 in every phase of the game, it's the rotation, which is bottom 5. And I just don't see an easy solution. I was on radio today in St. Louis, and they were asking me about the White Sox and, you know, what can we pick off that carcass? And, like, you know.
Well, you are a carcass. You can't call another carcass. You're a carcass.
You can't tell St. Louis that on their radio show.
The vultures are circling over you too, St. Louis.
Yeah, that's true.
Look up. They're there. They're coming.
Yeah. I know some teams are interested in Tyler O'Neill, but the problem is the teams that are interested in Tyler O'Neill are teams that are winning and want to add, and they don't want to give up their starting pitching depth. In fact, talked to two teams that were interested in Tyler O'Neill before the season and were just not willing to give up starting pitching depth because starting pitching depth is really important, you know?
Sure. So how about this, though? Like, at the time that the Tyler O'Neill, Ali Marmol flap happened, if you're John Mozeliak, you're calling shots in the front office, isn't it part of your job to rectify that with a move and just say, you know what? We have enough outfielders. We can take future value back in this trade. We could take a pitcher who's not going to help us now.
Wasn't the move that came right after that Jordan Walker
demoted? Walker soon after instead.
So you're kind of taking Tyler O'Neill's side?
I don't know if he took a side at all. I think that was a problem that they had that kind of spilled over into the season, having too many outfielders, and now they're just jumbling the lineup up and trying to get the right mix, and it's been something that has not worked so far.
But you can jumble that lineup all the time and none of them pitch, you know?
Which carcass teams, as they've come to be known, between the Cards and the White Sox, which one do you think actually wins more games?
That's really rude. I didn't mean to throw that out there.
You think the Cardinals still win more games than the White Sox?
Yes. I think the Cardinals are going to have some, because baseball is the only thing there. They're going to, maybe it's a dead cat bounce, but they're going to have some bounce. The White Sox, we've been talking about the White Sox for years being underperformers. When are they just a bad team?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, they're kind of like the new Angels. Well, the Angels are still the Angels, but.
Yeah, no one's the Angels. But seriously, when are they just a bad team? When are those just bad deals that look like team-friendly deals they signed all those guys to?
Hey, what you're saying is supported by the numbers, Britt. The White Sox are projected to win 64 more games. The Cardinals, 69 more games.
It's reasonably close. You want to give me +5 if I take the White Sox?
Sure.
Yeah, I guess.
What's weird is I was on the Cardinals before, and I seem to believe in the Cardinals more than you, but then I also believe in the White Sox more than I believe in the Cardinals, which you both don't agree with at all.
I'd love to hear the argument for believing in the White Sox.
So they've got the bunch of dudes hurt problem again, and Liam Hendricks is going to come back. I think that's going to be more than a great story. I think it's going to be a big addition to their bullpen. Moncada eventually comes back.
You can't just assume a guy coming back from cancer is going to pitch well.
But, I mean, look, he's doing really well health-wise. That's the most important thing. He's coming back. Moncada comes back.
I think will pitch better going forward. I think Cease will pitch better going forward.
They have so many underperformers between Cease, Lynn, Giolito, Kopech. How could they not fix at least one of those guys? That would be pretty weird.
And then their bats are kind of similar too, where it's You figure some of those bats are going to wake up.
They do this every year. They do this every year.
Here's the difference, though. The AL Central as a group is now worse than the NL Central. If you believe that the Pirates are improved even a little, and the Reds are a young team with at least some good young pitching, they're a pesky team. Plus, pitching in Cincinnati is tough for road pitchers to deal with, just as it is for the Reds' own pitchers. I think it's an easier path to dig out of a division with both the Tigers and the Royals in it than it is to dig out of the NL Central basement right now. I think the Cubs and Reds are better than those other bottom two teams in the AL Central. Like, that's a part of it for me.
I'm gonna disagree that the Tigers are gonna have weeks where they look really good, like they sweep the Mets in a doubleheader, and then they're gonna have weeks where they look atrocious. So they're gonna kind of be an up and down team. I don't think they're gonna be the same level of terrible as.
I think they're more inexcusably bad than people realize. I think they strike out a lot. They don't do a lot of damage. Good.
This is wild to me. This year, we were supposed to have more of a balanced schedule, right? And we were supposed to, the teams play their division mates less and they play outside the division more. And I think what it's done is to show us how bad the Central actually is. Because right now, as a group, the AL Central is, I just did the math, come on, you know, 35 games under 500.
They basically are taking most of the losses that the AL East is racking up in surplus.
Right. And the AL East is, I can't do the math quick enough, but the AL East is like 35 games over, maybe more.
What about the NL Central?
That's a little bit more balanced. You've got the Pirates 9 over, the Brewers 6 over, the Cubs 500.
It's like perfectly balanced, actually.
It's almost, yeah it's almost exactly 500. But, yeah, the AL West.
It's Oakland really skews that.
It's the NL East and the AL East. Those are the two that are above 500.
Even with the Nats?
Yeah.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary. The Nats are a weird team. I stumbled into this earlier in the week. I saw Hannah Kaiser tweeted out that the Nationals are great at tempering strikeouts. Their offense, they don't strike out. 18.1% strikeout rate entering play on Thursday. And no team in the league is striking out less than the Nationals. But my first thought was, okay, but are they good hitters not striking out? Or are they just guys that make contact?
Is this just the Royals again?
They've got a bunch of fill-in guys that are up there like just doing a good job not whiffing because whiffing gets you sent down. And I think it's more of that because they are 29th in barrel rate, right? They have an 82 WRC plus.
30th in slugging.
The Nationals right now are an offense built like the Cleveland Guardians, except the Guardians at least run. The Guardians can't do much of anything except run. Yeah. That's all they can do. 37 steals compared to 17 steals for the Nationals.
It could be an idea. You know, if you look at the kind of guys they acquired in terms of CJ Abrams I don't know who else.
He's their big speed guy.
I think he could be a really good player. I think he will be.
Kaybert Ruiz. Yeah, Ruiz too. Both those guys make a lot of contact softly.
What I think you're going to start to see though, for small market teams, is you're going to see more contact teams. Now, part of it with the Nats could also be that these guys are young. They're still kind of figuring out the league. And yeah, they are trying to not strike out. But I think one of the byproducts of these new rules, what you may see is teams really kind of clamp down on strikeouts. Like contact's going to be more king because you can't shift anymore. So you like your chances with balls in play more than you did before when you were able to shift. So I think Cleveland anticipated these rules years in advance. And also Cleveland is just a team that isn't going to afford to buy these bats, right? So they're going to have to win the way they're going to have to win, which is running the bases well, stealing a lot of bases, making a lot of contact. If they weren't decimated by pitching injuries, I think they'd have been a better team right now. But that's how they're built, and they're not built to hit the ball out of the ballpark outside of Josh Bell. So, you know, Jose Ramirez is another guy who can hit for power. But like, I think the issue with Cleveland is they can't have a pitching staff that isn't firing on all cylinders. They have such a small margin for error. And right now they've just been crushed with injuries on the pitching side.
That's something I think they can backfill from, though, with the prospects they've got between Logan Allen and Tanner Bibee. Like, they're going to be fine. Cleveland's ability to develop as much pitching as they need, for me, is unquestioned. That is a skill that they have that's on the same level as any of the best organizations in baseball. They have that. Their ongoing struggle is developing impactful position players, right? Jose Ramirez and Francisco Lindor were huge wins for them, but it's been a while, and of course, Lindor's gone. The fruits of the trade of Lindor looked so good last year and have not been able to sustain the levels from a season ago, which is not a shocker. Andrés Giménez wasn't supposed to be as good as he was a year ago, so that was a surprise. So his regression shouldn't stun anybody. I almost wonder if they're trying to build in the mold of the 2015 Royals team that won the World Series. We all remember that team. It wasn't that long ago. That team was fifth in the league in stolen bases, but they actually did have a little bit of power, right? They weren't completely devoid of power. 15.9% K rate, definitely a strength for them at the time. I believe that was the lowest strikeout rate in the league. I think that's a perfectly fine thing to aspire to, but you have to be able to do some damage. And at least that Royals team, they were 11th in slugging percentage. They had a 412 slugging percentage that year, but that was 11th in the league. That's good. Yeah. That works. The Guardians are slugging 338 right now. I don't know why they can't figure that part out, because if a team like Oakland can find the Brent Rookers, the mashers like that,
why don't you throw a couple of those in?
Why can't Cleveland find their versions of those players? Or if they can't develop them themselves, why can't you just by via waivers get those guys?
They did try with Franmil Reyes.
And they tried with Josh Bell. They bought Josh Bell for that reason.
I'm surprised that hasn't worked out. I liked that move at the time.
Yeah. Well, he's like, I think what you're going to see from him as it gets warmer is you're going to see some hot stretch. He's like that prototypical power hitter, right? Hot or cold, there's not a whole lot in between with that guy.
Yeah. I've seen him look lost and then he'll just go on a tear.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, one thing that's interesting about Cleveland is that it's a hitter's park generally, but it's super cold early in the season.
Yeah.
And temperature is the biggest park factor. So once it gets warm in Cleveland, they definitely, like, I think Josh Naylor will warm up and hit for power. I think Josh Bell will warm up and hit for power. So there's some, I wonder how much of what Cleveland does is designed to be suited to their home park, you know, and thinking about their home park. So I think the offense will have better days. The pitching is making its way through it. I think they will win the division, but the Twins are making it more of a thing.
Yeah. Still got Cleveland winning the division. Okay.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
So where's the offensive improvement coming from? Is it coming from weather and veterans getting back to previous levels? Is it an outside acquisition? Is it a prospect coming up? They've got plenty of upper-level position player prospects nearing big league readiness too. How do they close that gap? Because when I look at the Twins versus the Guardians, I see a much more balanced team for the Twins and one that's so much more dangerous. Where the Guardians, even if they were to win the division or get a wild card, I think when you put their bats up against the firepower that you get in October, they're just going to have a very difficult time getting all the way to a World Series and winning.
With singles.
I just don't think that style of play can work right now.
I think Bell will get right. I think Ahmed Rosario is coming back from injury and he'll get better than he is. I mean, right now he's 42% worse than league average with a bat. I mean, I don't think that'll continue. I think Naylor will get better. I think Oscar Gonzalez, you know, can get right. There's guys who can play better And I really like the young prospects. So if I was Cleveland, I would just give Tanner Bibee and Logan Allen roster slots, rotation slots, and let them go. So, you know, some sorting through where they take guys who have been playing and say, you know, sorry, you're more of a backup now. Sorry, you're in the bullpen now, that sort of deal. Some of that sorting through is happening right now. Isn't it kind of interesting to y'all? Didn't you notice May 1st, like, the White Sox were the first, that like the most egregious example of this, but didn't you see a ton of stuff happen on May 1st, transactions wise?
Yeah. Seemed like it.
Just a lot of like, oh, we're optioning like three guys, or like, I don't know. It just felt, the White Sox were the craziest because they had this, it looked like a tombstone, you know, it was like they had this black like themed tweet with like, you know, 30 white lines on it of all the guys that were demoted and pulled up. And
there's also a lot of minor league guys who have like clauses that if they're not called up by a certain day, people forget about that too when they look at it.
Maybe Billy Hamilton has something to do with that.
So,
oh, I wonder if Billy Hamilton's call up has. There's something a lot to do of that. That. He's totally the kind of veteran fine that would print, have a
yes, that like
clause.
If they're not up by a certain date, then they can be a free agent and sign somewhere else. So there's a lot of that. I remember on the beat, you always kind of looked at like May 1st and sometimes June 1st. As big days to check in with like guys in the minors to see if they're
June
opting
is
out.
Like a rookies thing, yeah. Kind of thing. I think there's like some sort of threshold there for,
yep,
super
also
two.
Also that,
something.
Yeah. So like you kind of always kind of know, and then also teams can say, hey, we gave you a month, which they feel like, you know, which is a decent sample size for guys who they don't have like that long track record. If a guy made a team out of spring training and had a great camp, you know, you don't want to give him a week or two, right? You now give him a month. He couldn't get it together. Like if Anthony Volpe, remember when he came up and you know, he really struggled for a while.
If he was still struggling as bad as he was the first week.
He'd be in the minor leagues, you know? Damn, so I think there's that That's element true. To it too.
Hey, a shout out for the Rockies. They have stuck with Ezekiel Tovar and he is wreaking some havoc on the Brewers this week in that series. I've been watching that and it's been a painful series for me to watch for a number of reasons, but I have to applaud their patience.
Yes, the Brewers in Colorado.
It's my least favorite place to watch the Brewers.
Don't watch them.
If you're a fan of a team that goes into Colorado, it is awful to watch your favorite team play against the Rockies because you know your team is probably better, but it doesn't matter because the park is a fun house. It's like trying to break into Kevin McAllister's house on Christmas Eve. It's awful. Don't do it. Terrible idea. Oh, never God. Go there.
I love it. My mom's a big Padres fan, and every time they play the Rockies, she's like, I can't watch these games. I can't. They can't beat the Rockies.
When you expect them to win, when the matchup, the pitching matchup's like way in their favor, Padres are going to go win today. Nope. No. They're gonna lose 8-2 instead because Colorado. Britt, you wrote about this. Steals are way up. Billy Hamilton coming back up. It's kind of fun because there was a point in time where I think a lot of us were dreaming on the potential of what Billy Hamilton could become as a big league player. You go back almost 10 years now, he came up in that Red system, and we saw ridiculous stolen base totals in the minors. And I think Billy Hamilton is a really good reminder of just how different the quality of pitching is across all the minor league levels, how difficult it is to get on base as a big leaguer compared to being a player at high A or double A. Delino DeShields Jr. is another player like that. I think he had a close to 100 steal season in the minor leagues and got to the big leagues. And of course, wasn't getting on base enough to run that often. And even if you're really fast, pitchers and catchers are a little better at controlling the running game at the highest level. But steals are way up this season. This seems like it's here to stay. This seems like a change that with the bigger bases, the disengagement rules, like all of those things are probably successful enough where I don't really see a reason for baseball to reverse course after the season. Like, do you feel like this is being well received among the players and coaches that you've talked to?
So I think the teams that are young and that are really exploiting this love it. The teams that are old and aren't stealing a lot of bases obviously don't like it, right? And you've seen it. Like when the Pirates played the Dodgers, I think it was last week, maybe 2 weeks ago now.
Oh my God, they were
it was just like such, yeah, it was such a contrast between a young athletic team and just an older team that, like, I don't want to say refuses, but like it's just not in their skill set personnel wise. So you really could kind of see the difference. I think about the Orioles and the Red Sox that opening weekend where the Orioles had 5 steals in a game, right? You're not going to see that every night, but you are seeing the Guardians, the Pirates, the Orioles, Arizona, the Diamondbacks. You're seeing the Marlins. You're seeing Oakland. You're seeing these teams take advantage of it. Now, this isn't like the stealing of the 80s because, as Sandy Alomar Jr. told me, those were burners. Those were guys who could steal no matter what. We probably don't have those guys in the game anymore. Those guys have been phased out. Could we see these guys again? Maybe. If teams decide that they care about stolen bases and they really want to develop the speed rather than have these guys come up and, you know, not work on base running, not work on stolen bases at all. And then these guys come up and, you know, a lot of guys have talked about how it negatively impacts their WAR. So there's that issue of, you know, when you get caught.
They don't want to get caught.
Exactly. It crushes your WAR, and your WAR is what teams use against you or for you, but usually against you when they go to arbitration, right? It's what gets talked about more than any other stat. So for a while, especially in the 2000s, we really didn't have, there really was not a lot of emphasis on stolen bases. Guys really didn't do it. So I think now it's going to be an organization-to-organization thing. Cleveland has embraced it, but Cleveland has been obsessed with base running for a long time. Dr. Rajay Davis, who said he played on 8 organizations and nobody was as into base running as Cleveland, but they have to be, as we talked about. Like, they have to win in the margins,
some quotes,
right?
From, was Tampa it Bay Tito in the story that was talking about? We run because we have
to. Yeah,
it
says, we have to. That's the only way we can win. So I think teams are going to look at this and say, should we do this? Is it going to help us? Do we have this personnel? Because you talked about Billy Hamilton. There's a guy named David Hamilton in Boston system who had 70 plus steals in the minor leagues, who went first to third on a ground ball in the infield. Like, that's game-changing kind of speed, right? So could we start? I hope we start to see those kind of guys. Ronald Acuna is fun to watch, and, you know, Cedric Mullins and some of these other guys who have a lot of steals. But I want to see a guy who can go anytime, any count, no matter what, right? Everyone wants to see a Ricky Henderson or a Vince Coleman back in the sport. We actually have a chance at that if an organization starts to value that. And that starts with just drafting and developing them, though. You can't really get a tiger to change his stripes at the big league level. So we're at the tip of the iceberg of what this actually means.
Yeah.
In 5 years, maybe we have a team that's got 4 or 5 guys with 40 plus steals. And that's how they do it. You mentioned the Royals. Yeah, maybe teams do figure out, hey, this is a huge advantage.
I think no team actually embodies the state of the current stolen base situation more than the Pirates. And I think of two players in particular, because yes, they are a young team. And so you do have guys like Jack Zawinski and Ke'Bryan Hayes, you know, stealing bases. But the two players that I actually think about the most are Jiwon Bae, which, you know, he's kind of pressed into service because O'Neill Cruz is hurt, but he has 13 steals. He's the kind of guy who doesn't hit the ball hard, and he's going to play defense and try to wreak havoc on the baselines. You know, that's kind of a throwback in a way. And that's the kind of role that you're talking about. Will we have a burner? You know, Bae is not a burner in the burner sense, but, like, you know, will that place be taken by a Billy Hamilton or somebody in the future that's going to just have 100 steals? And, you know, that's a possibility. But the Pirates also have Carlos Santana heading for the most steals he's had in 10 years. And so it's not just, you know, yeah. Andrew McCutchen has 4 steals, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's not just, you know, Jiwon Bae and the youth of the squad. It's also, you know, just taking advantage of it and pushing and pushing and pushing. And I really do see this Pirates team as seeing the rule changes and trying to take the most advantage of the things on the margin as they could. Carlos Santana, and he hasn't played yet, but G-Man Choi were two of the guys who hit into the shift more often than any other free agent that was on the market. They signed both of them for like a combined $6 million. You know, oh, stolen bases are going to be easy. Jiwon Bae was he a waiver claim? I believe he was a waiver claim. Oh, they've had him for a while. Okay. But he, I think he probably leapfrogged some people in getting here. There were a lot of other options at second. They have Tucapita Marcano. They have, you know, they have all sorts of kind of guys they've run through, you know, Diego Castillo and other guys they've run through. Jiwon Bae was not at the front of the line. I think his speed put him at the front of the line this year when O'Neill Cruz got hurt. And so they've kind of done some things to try and push the gas pedal, I would say, on rules changes. And then there are other teams, I think, who have taken more of a, you know, wait and see approach. You know, I think that's, you know, a little bit more what's going on in Boston when it comes to speed. They have 15 steals as a group, you know, and, you know, they didn't necessarily go out and sign guys who hit into shift and stuff like that. So Minnesota, amazingly, 6 steals next to the Pirates 44. I mean, that's a big wide gap in terms of philosophies, I think.
I think the thing about the Pirates running as much as they are, they're putting that on top of other things that are going well. Contrasting that to what we were talking about, the Guardians earlier, they are eighth. The Pirates are eighth in barrel rate. They're fifth league-wide in walk rate. They're doing a good job tempering strikeouts. They're striking out 20.8% of the time as a team, right? So they're 10% better than a league average offense because they're ticking all of the right boxes. They're doing so many more things right now in Pittsburgh than they've done seemingly the last 5 years. I hope for their sake it can last. I wonder if they have enough in the tank to go out and actually make some moves, come the trade deadline, if they want to add to the roster that way. We already talked about the prospects, I think, last week that they could bring up and possibly add more athleticism and more power to this roster. That seems like the most likely thing because it doesn't cost anything, but you never know. Maybe they're actually going to believe in what they have put together. And if there were a Manager of the Year award given out on May 4th, I think it's pretty safe to say Derek Shelton would be getting some hardware because no one saw this coming. No one anywhere. We have to go. On our way out the door, a reminder, you can get a subscription to The Athletic for $1 a month for the first year at theathletic.com/baseballshow. You can find Britt on Twitter at Britt_Giroli. You can find Eno at EnoSaris. You can find me at Derek Van Riper. The Athletic Baseball Show returns on Friday.
Always got the green light here.
Green light.